Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC on Fox 18 event, which takes place in Newark, New Jersey. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, our premium bets for UFC Fight Night 81 went 1-1 to profit 0.05 units overall. We won our play on Ed Herman, but lost our bet on champion TJ Dillashaw. We also lost our one-unit free bet on the Latifi O'Connell over 1.5 rounds total. Back to the present, UFC on Fox 18 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired on Network Fox, Fox Sports 1, and UFC Fight Pass this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. All right, now kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass, we have a lightweight battle between Tony Martin, who is 9-3, and Felipe Olivieri, who is 14-4. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Martin minus 155, the comeback on Olivieri, plus 115. Looking at our official sponsor, FiveDimes.eu, right now it's Martin minus 185, the comeback on Olivieri is plus 160. So more action coming in for Tony Martin. Not really that surprised. I mean, the guy has showed some really good skill in the UFC thus far. I mean, it's a shame that he's honestly lost three out of his four fights, because the guy is really the total package, has it all. It's just his fight IQ at times, and obviously his cardio has been a letdown and a little bit of a disappointment. But in this spot against Oliveri, he does have some advantages in his fight, and the public believes in him, and he should get back on track in the win column, at least here in this spot. But it's going to be a difficult fight, because Oliveri, I'll start off with him first. He was a veteran of the Ultimate Fighter 2 Brazil. He lost in the preliminary round, actually, by a very close competitive unanimous decision fight in a hard-fought battle. So Oliveri is one of those guys that has a well-rounded skill set, but he prefers to utilize a striking game. But he really does have a little bit of everything. So it's not going to be an easy fight for Martin, even though he does have some physical advantages over Oliveri in this spot, because Oliveri really has an aggressive pace. He throws everything with power. I mean, almost every strike he throws, he intends to really knock his opponent out. He's one of those type of fighters. He mixes in his kicks really frequently as well. So really solid clinch game to go along with it. Every area and every aspect, Oliveri could be very dangerous. Now, his takedown D, where it's going to come into play here for sure against Martin, because I'm sure Martin's going to want to look to take this fight to the floor at some point or another. It's actually Oliveri's takedown defense is okay, but his aggressive nature kind of leads him to getting taken down and getting put on his back as well. But once on his back, he does look for submission. He looks for reversals. And then if he does get top position, he's very effective with ground and pound. So Oliveri is not going to be an easy fight for him. But at the same time, a lot of the things that I said with Oliveri, I mean, Martin on the feet, he's got a little bit of power. He's a little bit underrated at times. I mean, his defensively, you'd like to him to tighten up that D a little bit, but he can still push an aggressive pace. On the floor, though, with his wrestling and his offensive submission game is actually pretty fun to watch. I mean, the guy is definitely a skilled fighter. So again, another guy that's really well-rounded. It's just his cardio and IQ that really stands out to me the most. So that's why he's even under 2-1 at all, because I mean, again, with his physical attributes over Oliveri in this spot and his ability to finish the fights as well, especially on the ground, I mean, he should be a rightful favorite in this spot. It's just, for me, it's not a very confident fight for him until he shows us that he can put together some pretty consistent performances. I'm always going to honestly have a question mark over Martin. I am going to pick him to win this fight again, though, because I think it's his fight to win or lose, basically, is what it comes down to. I mean, I think he can win this fight. And compared to some of the other competition that he's recently faced, it's kind of a step down for him. And again, Oliveri just kind of coming into the UFC, it's going to be a step up in competition for him. So it's Martin's fight to win or lose. I'm going to pick him to win, but as the fight progresses, I could see him making a mistake and getting caught with something crazy as well. So no confidence in it, honestly, but I am going to pick Martin to win.
Yeah, Tony Martin just has had horrible luck with his matchmaking. His three UFC losses are to Benil Dariush, Magomedov, and Leonardo Santos, and they're all guys that are either in the top 15 or knocking on the door of the top 15. And honestly, he is a lot better than what we've seen. I mean, hell, he was winning all of those fights against those excellent fighters. And then either he started to slow down, or maybe his opponent picked up on something or took advantage of an opening. So he definitely has all the tools to be a serious threat in the lightweight division. He just needs to put it all together and be able to go that hard with those skills for the full three rounds if need be. I think part of it is the fact that he had to do a lot of his fights outside the U.S. or short notice. And I think full training camp, especially against somebody making their UFC debut, he's going to be in a good position here. Oliveira is a good prospect. He trains out of Nova Uniao, so you know that he's going to come in prepared. But I really think that he's going to be at a big physical disadvantage. Martin should be able to bully him around, especially if he wants to take this fight to the ground. Oliveira is dangerous on the feet, so I think that he's going to have a slight edge there. But Martin's stand-up has actually gotten pretty good, too. So I expect Martin to be able to hold his own on the feet long enough to find an opening to get it to the floor. And once it's on the floor, Martin should be able to overpower Oliveira. I can see him getting a Kimura, you know, some kind of physical submission where he just overpowers his opponent on the ground and forces a tap. So obviously, Martin has had conditioning issues in the past, so if this fight gets out of the first round, or maybe even starts to go deep into the second, you know, be a little cautious. I would definitely be nervous if I'm a Tony Martin backer at that point, but I still think that Tony Martin can win this fight, and I expect him to either get a early submission or potentially be able to survive long enough to win a decision, even if he fades in the third round. So my pick is going to be Tony Martin. Now dropping down to the featherweight division, we have Damon Jackson, who is 9-2, taking on Levon Makhachvili, who is 10-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Makhachvili -280, the comeback on Jackson +200, looking over at five dimes right now. It's Makhachvili -310, the comeback on Jackson is +255. So a little bit more action coming in on Makhachvili. They are going to have balanced action overall on this fight as well. But the lean obviously here is Makhachvili, and I believe that it's probably true. I mean, Jackson, he's 0-2 thus far in the UFC. It's a shame because honestly, he was quite a prospect before he entered the octagon and lost to Medeiros in his first fight. Because of his submission game and his ground game really is what sets Jackson apart from most. I mean, the guy definitely has some skill on the ground. He's got some decent wrestling, unorthodox style of going about it at times. But once he gets you on the ground, he's very dangerous. I mean, he's aggressive. He attacks. He looks for the submission. And it's really hard to defend. I mean, thus far, again, in the UFC, he hasn't fared too well, and he's actually been submitted. So what he does best has actually happened to him. But he's one of those fighters that's always game. Especially on the ground, and there's no doubt about it. Now, his stand-up game, it's okay. I mean, he tends to be aggressive at times, but he does leave some openings on the feet where you could tag him a little bit. So he definitely wants to shoot in and get the fight to the floor and work his submission game. Against Makhachvili, that's not really going to be easy to do because Makhachvili has shown very decent takedown defense, very good wrestling in his own right. So he should be able to control this fight and keep upright. And if he does, I think he is the more technical striker. He's a better striker. He's got a little bit more pure power on the feet as well. And I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, Jackson has been submitted a couple times thus far in the UFC. If Makhachvili, even though he hasn't won by sub yet in his career, I think that's a little bit underrated because he can win by submission and he does have a well-rounded skill set in his own right. So I think he can even possibly look for an opening and submit Jackson along the way as well. But more than anything else, I think Makhachvili can land and outstrike Jackson and basically keep this fight in his realm, which will probably stand up in this particular matchup for him. So it is Makhachvili's fight to win or lose as well. He's a solid favorite for a reason. I think he is going to come through with a win here. 3-1 is a little tricky as far as betting this fight because Jackson, one mistake with Jackson, and you can risk losing obviously by submission, but I do think Makhachvili is good enough that his submission defense and his overall game is good enough that he probably doesn't get caught. So I do lean Makhachvili. I am confident that he probably comes through and wins this fight.
Damon Jackson is a very good ground fighter. He does a good job getting takedowns. He has a solid job of working for submissions, potentially opening up ground and pound, and he's not a terrible striker either. The problem is Makhachvili is just a little bit better than him everywhere, except maybe pure submission skills. And Jackson is going to have a little bit of the physical edge too, due to being about 3 inches taller with a 3-inch reach advantage. But the thing that helps Makhachvili here is he just is very composed. I do think that Makhachvili is a little bit of the better wrestler, so if it does come down to ground scrambles, I can see Makhachkala landing in top position, which would definitely be to his advantage if it goes to the judges. Now, on the feet, Jackson is probably going to be a little bit more active, and Makhachkala does have a tendency to be a little too passive on the feet and sit back and kind of let the fight take place, and he reacts to it. So Jackson could score some points on the feet, but I do think Makhachkala is the better overall striker. He definitely has the better form. And one other thing that you definitely have to consider is Makhachkala in his last fight, I mean, he went toe-to-toe with Hakran Diaz, one of the best featherweight prospects out of Brazil. And that fight went to split decision, and it was in Brazil. I mean, this was a close fight, and Makhachkala almost pulled it out. And I think that he is right there at that level where if he can start putting it together and maybe get a little bit more aggressive, he could potentially become a guy that could get in the mix in the top 20, top 15 down the line. He is a very solid overall prospect. And Jackson was a good prospect too out of Legacy. He's just had a tough run of things with his UFC debut on short notice at lightweight, getting beat really quickly, and then making a big mistake in his last fight against Tony Jason, although that got overturned due to a drug test from Jason. Now, overall, I do favor Makhachkala. I just think he's a little bit better in all the important facets of the fight. But don't sleep on Jackson picking up a couple takedowns, because I'm not quite sure how Makhachkala is going to get out of some bad situations if Jackson does get a top position against him. We could end up seeing Jackson live up to that Leech nickname and grind this out, but I am going to favor Makhachkala overall, so he is my pick. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Matt Dwyer, who is 8-3 overall, taking on Randy Brown, who is 6-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Brown, minus 230, the comeback on Dwyer, plus 170, and there has been some movement here, and it's been on the underdog. Right now, Brown is actually minus 170, the comeback on Dwyer is plus 150. So more action has come in on Dwyer. I mean, honestly, I could respect that because Dwyer's performance in his last fight, I mean, he was a warrior. You got to give him a lot of respect. That Joban fight was a classic. I mean, he fought to win before that also, even though he lost that Joban fight in a very competitive decision. His win over Macario was impressive as well. So outside of his debut loss to Tumanov, where he got head kick, vicious head kick knockout, that Tumanov landed actually, outside of that, he's actually looked pretty good. And Dwyer is a very experienced fighter at this point compared to Brown. I mean, as far as the level of competition he's faced and his confidence and of course his physical attributes as well. Overall, he's going to be a couple inches taller. Although Brown is going to have a reach advantage in this fight, even though he's a couple inches shorter than Dwyer. I mean, I think Dwyer is just a little bit ahead of Brown right now as far as his MMA skill set and his confidence and the mental game. But make no mistake, Brown's a very talented fighter. There really isn't a whole lot of footage out there on Brown. I mean, if you dig deep, you can definitely dig up a few of his fights and see what Brown's about. A lot of highlight videos out there as well. So Brown, to most people, he's a little bit of an unknown, but this guy has athleticism. He's an explosive striker with huge knockout power. He's got good ground and pound. He's got also some sub skill on the ground as well. So he's a fighter that has a little bit of everything. It's just he's a little raw still at this point, but he's getting better fight by fight. And of course, he's one of these guys that came in as the Ring of Combat welterweight champion. So he's got that going for him. I mean, he won a strap in one of the organizations that's actually been feeding decent prospects into the UFC. So he has something going for him there. And he was also discovered on Dana White's show looking for a fight. So he's got that kind of not the Sage Northcutt type of hype, obviously, but he's another guy that Dana White kind of brought in from the show, and there's just all sorts of buzz around Brown, a lot of high expectations for him. And I think from what I've seen, he can really live up to it. Now, this is a very tough spot. I mean, they're not doing him any favors putting him against a guy like Dwyer, but this should be a pretty competitive matchup. And it's a fight that I honestly think that Brown can win. I mean, his clinch work is really nasty. He has devastating knees. Dwyer's chin is somewhat suspect to me. So it's the kind of fight that I think they're going to be exchanging strikes on the feet. And I think that Brown will probably be a little bit more effective and a little bit more dangerous. And Dwyer's chin, I just don't quite trust that much. Even though it hung in there against a very talented fighter again, against Joban, I still think that Brown brings a little bit of something different and unique, unorthodox, but at the same time effective game that's going to be working against a guy like Dwyer. So I really have a slight lean towards Brown at this point. I think that the hype is going to be real. And he, again, with a solid win over a guy like Dwyer in his UFC debut, I think the sky's going to be the limit. He's going to slowly progress and get better and better, even though this isn't going to be a hard fight for him, a hard debut to win. So I'm going to lean towards Brown here. It is, again, understandable that some of the action's coming in on Dwyer at this point, but I do think that Brown is going to be the one with his hand raised at the end. So I think he probably wins it by knockout at some point. If it hits the scorecards, it's probably going to be close, but he might be able to steal a decision as well. So my official pick is going to be Brown to beat Dwyer.
And I'll give Matt Dwyer this. He's a lot better than I initially thought he was. I expected him to come into the UFC, get knocked out a couple times, and be sent packing. And yeah, he did get absolutely floored in his UFC debut against Albert Tumenov, but then he knocks out Makario and then goes on and has a fight of the night against Alan Joban. So his last two performances have been excellent. And I think that he's going to be a solid test for Randy Brown. I mean, extremely tough test, because Randy Brown is a great prospect. He is a very good fluid striker, extremely hard worker, has a underrated ground game with a lot of an active guard, but Matt Dwyer definitely has the experience edge on him. He has been in there against a lot of decent fighters. Even before his time in the UFC, he faced a couple of veterans that were UFC, that had fought in the UFC, stuff like that. So I expect that Dwyer might be able to use that experience a little bit against Brown, but the thing that Brown has going for him is he is extremely quick, very powerful, and he has a huge reach. One of the biggest reaches in the entire welterweight division in the UFC. The only guy with a longer reach than Brown's 80 inches is Neil Magny. And as you've seen, Neil Magny has really started to explode up the rankings. So even though Dwyer is actually a little bit taller than Brown, I mean, Dwyer's the tallest welterweight in the roster, Brown actually is 4 inches in reach against him. So, and the other thing that Brown has going for him is chin. I mean, we really haven't seen Brown's chin tested much in his pre-UFC fights, but Dwyer's definitely has been tested. He does not have a great chin. He gets hurt a lot in fights, and he did get knocked out by Tumenov, although a lot of people would have gotten knocked out by Tumenov. But I really still believe that if Brown connects with something solid, Dwyer's going out. And I can't say the same about Dwyer if he lands something solid. Another thing that Dwyer has going for him is that Brown has not left the second round in his professional career. All 6 fights he's had have ended before the end of the second round, mostly by TKO. He has a couple submissions to his name. And if Dwyer's able to drag this out a little bit, maybe Brown stumbles a little bit. Brown did lose a couple decisions in his amateur career, so that is something to consider. Now, on the feet, I think Brown should have an edge here, although Dwyer is still dangerous there. And on the ground, that actually could be something Dwyer might be able to use. He has scored some takedowns in the past prior to his UFC career. He's won fights with ground and pound. And if he can get Brown on his back, then Dwyer might be able to get something going, because Brown, while he has an active guard, he's not much of a ground threat in terms of amazing takedown defense. A lot of times he does allow himself to get pushed into the fence by his opponents. So I could definitely see Matt Dwyer utilizing that if the stand-up isn't working. But if this fight stays in open space for the most part, I think Randy Brown at some point picks up a knockout win. So my pick is going to be Randy Brown getting a solid performance in his UFC debut. Now moving on to the Fox Sports 1 prelims, we have a featherweight contest between Alex Caceres, who is 10-8 with 1 no contest, and Maciel Fullan, who is 10-5. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Caceres -350, the comeback on Fullan +250. Right now, looking over 5 times, it's Caceres -280, the comeback on Fullan +240. So line margins tightened up a little bit. There's not a tremendous amount of action coming in either way on this fight, understandably, because this is kind of a tough fight, especially where the line is. I think Caceres does have some advantages in this fight. Now, he is moving back up to 145, so he should be a little bit happier. He's not going to have to cut all that weight to drop to 135. Of course, one of the reasons that he's moving back up to 145 is that he's coming off that knockout loss to Rivera. So the problem with me and Cesaris is that chin, man. I mean, he does get tagged. He does get wobbled a lot. He's been knocked out now as well. So you can't trust that chin. But thankfully for him, Fulon has a little bit of power, but he doesn't have Rivera type of power that he just had to deal with in his last fight. So in this matchup, I think Cesaris has the skill set to beat Fulon. I mean, if you're looking at Fulon, he's okay. He's probably a little bit underrated. I mean, he's training at a good camp with Alliance, so he's going to get better. His UFC debut, official UFC debut outside of the Ultimate Fighter, was against Torres. He looked okay in that fight, was able to win a competitive decision, but then Amir Khani in his last fight was able to submit him. And I think that kind of showed Cesaris a path to victory here as well. So to me, I think the stand-up game is going to be relatively close. Fulon's not a bad striker. He's got a striking background, and he's working on all aspects of his game. So I think he's going to be more prepared, but at the same time, I don't think he's going to be able to handle Cesaris, especially the ground game of Cesaris. Cesaris is going to be a little bit longer. He's got the experience. He's been in there with great fighters, and I think he knows that all he has to do – I know it's going to be maybe difficult at times because Cesaris doesn't have great wrestling, but I think at one point or the other, he gets a fight to the floor, takes Fulon's back, and probably submits him as well. So the concern here, as I mentioned earlier, would be Cesaris' chin. Fulon, even though he doesn't have a tremendous amount of power, that's what I would be worried about if I was betting Cesaris, would be, man, maybe Fulon clips him and puts him out as well. But outside of that, maybe you see a competitive decision if it does hit the scorecards, especially with the state of MMA judging these days. But I think it's Cesaris' fight, and I think he does probably finish this fight inside. So I am going to pick Cesaris to win this fight.
The main thing going against Cesaris is the fact that he is moving back up to the featherweight division. We don't know how he's going to perform at featherweight. He didn't exactly light the world on fire at lightweight or featherweight before he finally did drop down to the bantamweight division. But maybe he's packing on a little bit more muscle to his frame. He's always been a really long, lanky guy, and he has been kind of physically dominated by some fighters, but that's not something that's going to happen here. Fulon is pretty much a stand-up fighter. He has a Taekwondo background. He's a pretty solid overall striker, and he does some of his work at Alliance MMA. And he's going to be pushing the pace. He's going to be trying to stand in the pocket and force Cesaris to trade with him. Neither guy has a great chin, although, honestly, I would say Cesaris' chin is actually a little bit better. But Cesaris doesn't pack a ton of power. He has hurt a couple people in the past, but for the most part, his biggest strength is on the ground. Now, Cesaris doesn't have a great wrestling pedigree. He doesn't have a lot of easy ways to get the fight to the floor, but if he can just close the distance against Fulon, I think he'll be in a decent spot. Fulon was submitted very quickly in his last fight. He is not great on the ground, and Cesaris definitely can be extremely crafty there. He has a good triangle choke, and he can just go for chokes and find openings. So I think what's going to happen here is Fulon's going to try to keep this in the pocket. Cesaris might oblige for a little bit, but at some point, this fight gets the distance closed, and I think Cesaris can take advantage of a mistake that Fulon makes, because Fulon just is not a complete mixed martial artist at this point. So I expect Cesaris to either pick up maybe a TKO on the ground or a submission. So my pick is going to be Alex Cesaris. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have George Sullivan, who is 17-4 with one no contest, taking on Alexander Yakovlev, who is 22-6-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I've been Sullivan, -135, the comeback on Yakovlev, -105. And to my surprise, a little bit, Yakovlev is now the favorite, -130. The comeback on Sullivan is +110. So the betting action early on did come in on Yakovlev. Now they're getting two-way action, so it's staying pretty steady, and there's a lot of split opinions on this fight. So I think we could see it bounce back and forth a little bit or drop to exactly a pick'em as they go. But this is a very intriguing fight. I mean, to me, George Sullivan definitely is a tough out in most cases. I know what stands out the most to me, though, has been his loss to Tim Means. I mean, I was just very surprised how intimidated he kind of was in that fight, because his first two fights in the UFC, I mean, the guy looked great. I mean, he pulled off an upset win over Rhodes, which was very surprising to most people. I mean, the way he pushes the pace, he's a very tough guy. I mean, he has that kind of grinding, relentless style that's hard to take him to the ground. And then he just constantly coming at you, and he has a little bit of power in the feet as well. He just makes life tough for you. He's one of those guys that really stylistically is a tough matchup for a lot of fighters, but Tim Means just ran through him. And part of that was because I think Sullivan was really intimidated. He bounced back and got a nice win over Waters, though, which kind of got him back on track. But there's still some question marks with Sullivan for me. And Yakovlev, even though that, you know, he's not really known for his striking power, he does have some underrated striking, and he is definitely getting better. And then on the ground, I think, is where he excels at the most, to be honest with you. I know he's kind of has that reputation of being both a little bit of a stand-up and submission type of fighter, ground fighter as well. He's been working very hard on his wrestling. I mean, even though his last fight was at lightweight against Gray Maynard, he still showed some decent wrestling in that fight as well. A lot of people were surprised that he was able to get top position on Gray, and just his wrestling in general actually held up pretty decent that spot. And then he was able to land some decent strikes on the feet as well. So Yakovlev is the type of guy that's definitely been getting better. He's been putting in the work. He's faced some tough competition even outside the UFC. So I think he's finally coming into his own a little bit here. And this is going to be a scrap. I mean, a pick 'em type of fight I think is fairly accurate, because with both these guys improving and Yakovlev actually being a few years younger, and I think he's a little bit more motivated at this point, it's going to be interesting. He is moving back up to 170. So he only had one fight at lightweight, and it was successful, obviously, over a named opponent in Maynard. But going back up to 170, I think he's a little bit more comfortable there. He's going to have a tough fight on his hands with Sullivan. I think Sullivan's best path to victory would actually be following something like Musok did against Yakovlev. He was able to control him against the cage. He was able to just kind of grind him and just outwork him a little bit and kind of control the tempo of the fight. I think that's what Sullivan's going to have to do to beat Yakovlev. But I think Yakovlev's improvement along the way, and I think he is a better submission fighter, obviously, as well on the ground. I think he's going to be able to hang in there, even on the feet or wherever the fight takes place. And he's going to be able to maybe get out of some bad spots, reverse things a little bit, and probably outstrike Sullivan from the outside a little bit to steal a decision here. So I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Yakovlev in this fight. I think he is a little bit more dangerous on the ground. He's capable of winning by submission. So if Sullivan makes a mistake, Yakovlev could definitely sub him there. And I think on the feet, even though Sullivan hits a little bit harder, I think Yakovlev can outpoint him a little bit there as well. So tough fight, coin flip type of fight, but I lean a little bit more towards Yakovlev. I think he's going to return back to 170 and maybe start a little run moving on up, especially if he keeps on improving like he has. So that's going to be my official pick.
Yakovlev has not had the greatest run in the UFC so far, especially in the welterweight division. I mean, obviously he was not going to win his debut against Damian Maia, but it was a winnable contest against Musoke, and he just couldn't really pull the trigger. He couldn't get enough going on the feet, and he actually ended up getting outstruck for the most part in that fight. The drop down to lightweight worked for him because he did get the win over Gray Maynard, but now he's moving back up to welterweight. So it obviously was not an easy weight cut for him. And it'll be interesting to see how he performs here against somebody like Sullivan, who is definitely a middle of the road, maybe a little bit below middle of the road UFC welterweight. Sullivan is a grinder. He's a guy that just kind of pushes forward, has decent overall striking, decent top control. He has a decent clinch. He's just kind of okay at everything. And Yakovlev, on the other hand, he has pretty good offensive wrestling, and his submission game isn't bad. I mean, he was able to avoid getting tapped out by Maia over the course of three rounds, even though Maia was on his back for most of that time. So I'll give him a little bit of credit there. And he does have some decent durability. I mean, he can eat some shots. And while he's not a great offensive striker, he's competent in terms of his offensive boxing. But I would not give him a striking edge against Sullivan. I think Sullivan can just pressure him and force him to back up repeatedly. And really, for me, the only way Yakovlev wins this fight is if he gets takedowns. Now, it's possible that he does. I mean, he was able to get takedowns against Maynard, but again, he had a huge size advantage against Maynard. He was just a lot bigger and stronger, and honestly, Maynard was pretty much near the end of his career in that fight. So it'll be very interesting to see if he's able to continue that wrestling success that he had in his last fight in this fight, especially up a weight class against somebody that's pretty big and strong in Sullivan. Now, Yakovlev is going to be very, very slightly bigger. He's got like 1 inch in height and 1 inch in reach, but I do still think that Sullivan can just put that pressure on him. And as long as Sullivan avoids getting put on his back repeatedly, then I think he's going to be in a decent spot here. So I'm actually going to go against the grain here and pick Sullivan to pick up probably a decision victory over Yakovlev. Now dropping down to the flyweight division, we have Dustin Ortiz, who is 15-4, taking on Wilson Hayes, who is 19-6. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I put Ortiz minus 230. The comeback on Hayes was plus 170. Right now, looking over the line at five dimes, it is Ortiz minus 220. The comeback on Hayes is plus 180. So line margins, again, kind of tightened up a little bit, and there is two-way action coming in on this fight as well. It's a good matchup. I mean, really, you got two of the best flyweights out there competing here. I mean, Ortiz has been in there with some quality competition thus far. And of course, I mean, those of you guys that have been around the sport for a while know that Hayes has fought a lot of great fighters throughout his career as well. He's been around for a long time and he's actually looked pretty solid at 125. The problem here is, I mean, stylistically, the way these guys match up, Hayes is more of your ground fighter. Now his stand-up game is getting better. I mean, he's definitely pushing forward and wants to throw on the feet a little bit to set up his takedowns, but he's been getting clipped. His defense isn't that great. He's been getting wobbled. His chin is starting to go a little bit, I think. And if you want to compare the two, I mean, Ortiz has enough wrestling, I think, to keep this fight upright. And if he does that, he should be able to outpoint Hayes on the feet and possibly even knock him out. So that's what it comes down to here in this spot. I mean, again, I was talking about Ortiz's level of competition in the UFC thus far. I mean, they haven't really gave him any slouches recently. I mean, even his loss to Benavidez was actually more competitive than most people thought it would be. So Ortiz has the confidence. I mean, he even went against a great grappler like Ray Borg. I know, again, the grappling styles of Borg and Hayes are a little bit different, but still, I mean, Borg can submit most people. Ortiz was able to survive some exchanges in that fight. Even though I thought that Ortiz personally lost that fight, it was still impressive, and the grappling exchanges were pretty fun to watch. So I think Ortiz probably does not get submitted by Hayes in this fight. I think his wrestling's probably good enough to keep it upright for the most part. And if he does, he should be able to outpoint Hayes, if not possibly knock him out, as I mentioned. So it's really a fight, I think, catered a little bit more towards Ortiz at this point. And I think he kind of keeps on climbing up the ladder, and eventually he might find himself in a title shot situation if he keeps on beating some solid opponents like Hayes here. So this would be a huge win if Hayes is able to pull it off, though, as well. He'll get himself right back in the mix, but I don't think he will here. I think it's just stylistically a bad matchup. So I am picking Ortiz to beat Hayes in this fight.
I just think this is a bad matchup for Wilson Hayes. Dustin Ortiz is very similar to him in terms of build. I mean, they pretty much have the same reach. Ortiz is like an inch taller. They have about the same leg reach. I mean, you name it, across the board, it's pretty much a dead heat. But the biggest difference between the two is Wilson Hayes does not have a very good chin. His durability is poor. He gets rocked or dropped in a lot of fights. Now, he hasn't been getting knocked out in the UFC, but, I mean, even that last fight against Formiga, he just could not hold his own there and ended up getting hurt in that fight, too. So I really think that Hayes' only way to win this fight is through takedowns and his jiu-jitsu, and Dustin Ortiz shouldn't have too much of an issue there because Ortiz is a pretty solid wrestler in his own right, and he has a lot more power in his hands than Hayes, and he backs it up by having a significantly better chin. I mean, he went three hard rounds with Joseph Benavidez, and he took some shots in that fight, and I guarantee if Wilson Hayes was in that exact same situation, he would not have lasted all three rounds. So the way I see this fight playing out is I see Ortiz getting a little bit of the better of the stand-up, and then on any exchanges that they have that are evenly traded, Hayes has the higher likelihood of getting hurt. And with Ortiz being the slightly better wrestler, I can see Ortiz potentially getting some ground and pound in too if he gets a takedown or two. But for the most part, I expect this fight to stay standing, and I think Ortiz either wins a decision on the feet or potentially gets a knockout. So my pick is going to be Dustin Ortiz. Now moving up to the middleweight division, we have Rafael Natal, who is 26-1, taking on Kevin Casey, who is 9-3 with two no contests. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Natal minus 170, the comeback on Casey plus 130. Right now it's Natal minus 165, the comeback on Casey plus 145. So same thing, line margins kind of tighten up a little bit. There is two-way action coming in on this fight as well. Has been bet up and down a little bit. Tough fight. We were just talking about chinny people with Hayes not really being able to trust him in that spot. I mean, both these guys, you can say the same thing about. Both these guys have been knocked out a few times in their career, and it's the type of fighter either way you can say that really you can't depend on their chin. I mean, they get clipped. They get tired along the way, and their defense becomes a little bit worse. So this is a very intriguing fight, a very tough fight. I mean, I think I lean a little bit more towards Natal because I think he's just a tad bit more well-rounded. But, man, it is going to be a fight because Casey, you cannot deny the improvements that the guy's made. And he's even shown some pretty decent stand up as of late. I mean, especially with his punching power, you got to be careful. I mean, he could definitely hit you. He obviously, Casey's best attribute is getting the fight to the floor and working his submission game, working his ground and pound. I mean, the guy has some power even on the floor. He gets on top. You don't want this guy dropping bombs at you. I mean, he's definitely underrated in a lot of aspects of the game. But he is getting better. His cardio is getting better. He's putting in the work. You could tell his confidence is getting better. So this is probably the best Casey that we've seen. I mean, based on his last few performances. So that's a good thing. But Natal, I still think, is a little bit more skilled. Casey's not going to be able to handle Natal on the ground. Even if he gets a takedown or two, I think it's not going to be a dominating performance there. And I think Natal will find his way to possibly reverse things or get on top and maybe look for a sub there as well. So the ground game kind of neutralizes each other out here in this fight. And I think Natal has a little bit more arsenal in his stand-up game that he can land a little bit more. He's got better leg kicks, obviously, just kicking game in general. I think he's got a little bit more power in the feet as well. Well, that's tough, I guess, because Casey does have some strong hands. So, I mean, knockout power-wise, you can make a case for either guy here. But I still think Natal is the more versed striker, and I think that's probably going to come into play here. So, tough fight. I mean, it is a competitive fight. The line indicates that as well. And I could realistically see it going either way. I just lean a little bit more towards Natal because I do think he's just the better overall mixed martial artist at this point. And I don't know if I could trust him more, but I think that the better fighter should win in this spot. So, I lean a little bit more towards Natal.
This is a tricky matchup because Kevin Casey is such a strong front runner that he gets off to great starts in fights, and then he fades. You've seen it multiple times. He's been able to pick up some really quick wins in his career. But for the most part, if fights get late into the second round or even the third round, he does not perform well at all. That did change in his last fight. He ended up winning a decision against Ildemar Alcantara. But I will say that I don't think Alcantara was really making him work in that fight, and Casey was able to find a second wind in that third round. Natal will definitely be making him work. Natal has an excellent ground game, so if this fight does go to the floor, I expect Natal to really push Casey and try to force him to either try to pass or try to get something going on the ground, or maybe Natal would even be throwing up a lot of attacks from his back. Or Natal could just possibly be constantly working back to his feet and make Casey really work to keep him down. Now, on the feet, Casey has power. He's not a great striker overall, but he does pack some wallop in his punch. And Natal definitely, to me, is the better overall striker. He's more technical. He does not have a great chin, though. So if Casey connects, Natal could definitely be put out. We've seen that happen with Natal where he's been doing good in a fight or even winning the fight, like against Andrew Craig, and then he just gets knocked out of nowhere. So I could definitely see Natal getting put out on the feet. I could potentially see Natal get put out from ground and pound on the floor. Casey is very dangerous, especially early. He does have that explosion, but once fights start not going his way, there's a little bit of quit in him. I mean, you saw it against Josh Saman. Casey started really strong in that fight. And then the second Saman started landing knees against the fence against him, he just completely wilted. So I can definitely see Casey winning the first round and then either getting finished late or losing the next two rounds and losing a decision. So basically, it's just whether or not you believe that Kevin Casey can go out there and take care of business quickly. And I'm just not quite sure that he's going to be able to do it. So I'm going to pick Rafael Natal to get that decision or the late stoppage. So my pick is going to be Sapo. Now dropping down to the lightweight division, we have Olivier Aubin-Mercier, who is 8-1, taking on Carlos Diego Ferreira, who is 11-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Aubin-Mercier, -245, the comeback on Ferreira, +175, right now looking over five dimes. It is Aubin-Mercier, -290, the comeback on Ferreira is +245. So Aubin-Mercier getting bet up a little bit. I mean, stylistically, this should be a good fight for him. I mean, he's the type of guy that, again, he's a little bit younger. He's constantly improving his game. He's putting the work in. He did have a very impressive performance in his last fight against a very game Tony Sims. I know that Sims is coming off that kind of crazy loss, submission loss, to Trujillo in his last fight, which was, it really was surprising in some ways, and especially with Aubin Mercier not getting a finish on the ground there as well. But overall, that was a pretty hard fought win for Aubin Mercier, because Tony Sims is a difficult guy. He's got decent takedown defense. Aubin Mercier was able to get the fight to the floor where he wants it, and he was able to do what he does best, and that's basically control, smother, land some ground and pound, look for the submission. I mean, that's his style, and that's what's effective for him. Now, he is getting better on the feet. He definitely has a little bit of power. He's got more confidence, and he's doing a lot of good things. I mean, training with TriStar, that's going to happen for you. And Ferreira, on the other hand, to me, I mean, I've always respected the guy. He's a tremendous talent. I mean, it's just unfortunate in those last two fights, he hasn't performed up to par like you expected, especially the Poirier fight. I was surprised that he got finished that early with Poirier. I thought it was going to be more of a firefight, and I thought he had a shot, actually, of maybe doing the KO that ended up happening to him, maybe him KOing Poirier that spot. So you got to credit Poirier. But outside of that, what you have to really look at is Ferreira's loss to Dariush. I mean, that's the similar type of style that Aubin Mercier is going to play here. I think he's going to look to get the fight to the floor. That's what Dariush was able to do, and he was able to control Ferreira long enough to obviously grind out the decision win, and that's exactly what Aubin Mercier is going to bring to the table here. Now, Ferreira on the ground is pretty slick, man. I mean, he has a really good submission game. He's not easy to control. He's not easy to deal with, so depending on how really they match up on the floor, we're not going to know until they get in there and you know, do battle here. But I think that Ferreira is going to make Aubin Mercier's life a little bit tough, even if he does get taken down and get put on his back. But overall, I think that's the game plan. And that's, again, the kind of the best path to victory for Aubin Mercier to basically defeat Ferreira. Now, on the feet, I do give the edge to Ferreira. He has pretty good striking. Now, his defense has looked a little bit bad recently. I mean, and he's looked a little sloppy. I think Ferreira is better than what he showed even in the stand-up realm in the UFC thus far. And he can be very dangerous. I mean, he only has one official knockout on his resume, but he does have some power on the feet as well. So Aubin Mercier has to be careful on the feet, because Ferreira is going to be a little bit longer. He's going to have, I believe, 4 inches of pure reach, and he is the better striker in this spot. And again, with the jiu-jitsu skill of Ferreira, anywhere the fight takes place, it's not going to be an easy fight for Aubin Mercier. So I actually like this matchup, because they are testing Aubin Mercier. They're kind of giving him a challenge, and that's what you like to see in rising prospects. So if he wins this fight, which I think he will, it's going to be a big notch on his resume. So I am leaning toward Aubin Mercier, because again, I think he is going to be able to control the tempo of the fight. And when it hits the scorecards, I think it's going to be his fight to win. So I'm leaning that way, but it should be a pretty competitive battle and an interesting one. I'm looking forward to it.
This is a very tricky matchup for Mercier, because Carlos Diego Ferreira has an exceptional ground game, and that's where Mercier probably wants this fight. Diego Ferreira has a solid overall boxing. It did not look good in his loss to Dustin Poirier. I'll give him that. But Aubin Mercier has not looked that good on the feet so far in his UFC career. He's been more passable there, where he just tries to hang on until there's an opportunity to get the fight to the floor. And I think he could get himself in a little bit of trouble if he's constantly going for takedowns against Ferreira, because Ferreira has an exceptional guard. I mean, even Benil Dariush didn't really go for many submissions against him. It was more a takedown, be very conservative in his guard, not really trying to pass, not really trying to do a lot, just trying to stay there and win a decision. So if Mercier gets a little overconfident on the ground, he could find himself in some deep trouble, whether it's submission attempts, sweeps, you name it. Now, on the feet, Ferreira actually should be a little bit better there, too. You saw Mercier get outworked by Chad Laprise on the feet, so I do think that he could be vulnerable in this fight. But that being said, the biggest advantage Aubin Mercier has is his exceptional wrestling and athleticism. He does a great job of getting people to the floor, and he usually is pretty aggressive trying to get people's backs. I don't think that's going to happen here, but I can see him getting takedowns. And as if he's able to get takedowns and avoid getting in any trouble, like maybe just be conservative with his takedowns, then I can see him grinding out a decision. I don't know if this fight's going to be entertaining or wild. It just all depends on how conservative Mercier is if and when he does take this fight to the floor, because if it stays standing, I see Carlos Diego Ferreira getting the better of it. So I expect Aubin Mercier to use that wrestling to get that top control, and I kind of expect him to lay and pray here a little bit. I mean, he hardly threw any strikes against Tony Sims, and if he wasn't even willing to throw strikes against Tony Sims on the ground, then I don't know if he's even going to lift his hands, unclasp his hands on the canvas against Ferreira. I think this fight ends up being a lot less exciting than people are probably hoping. But overall, I'm siding with the Canadian. Now, headlining the FS1 prelims is a welterweight battle between Tarek Saffiedine, who is 15-4, and Jake Ellenberger, who is 30-10. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I've been Saffiedine minus 170, the comeback on Ellenberger plus 130. Right now, looking over at five dimes, it's Saffiedine minus 250. Now, this line has been up for a while, so it's got steady kind of bet up a little bit. And, of course, a little bit more action coming in on Saffiedine. That's why he's a bigger favorite right now, too. And looking at things, I mean, it all depends. I mean, obviously, Saffiedine's coming off that, the first knockout loss of his career to McDonald. I mean, that was a devastating loss for him. And he's been out ever since. And that was October of 2014. So there's a lot of question marks behind Saffiedine at this point. And Ellenberger, of course, is obviously trying to get back on track himself. I mean, he lost with that crazy highlight reel spinning hook kick to Stephen Thompson on the feet as well. But that wasn't a big shocker because, I mean, that's what Stephen Thompson kind of does best. So he fought a tremendous striker, and Thompson was able to do his thing. Even though early on in that fight, I mean, Ellenberger looked okay. But, I mean, as the fight progressed, obviously wasn't a good thing for him. And so there's been some sketchy performances from Ellenberger recently. And I think the more steady fighter has been Saffiedine. Now, both these guys are getting up there as far as MMA years goes. I mean, they're fairly young still. If you look at it, Ellenberger's only 30 years old. Saffiedine's 29. So they're not old by any means, but at the same time, they've been in the sport for so long and fought such decent competition that you have seen possibly a bit of a decline. Now, it's not as fair to see that, to say that sort of thing for Saffiedine, because he is really only coming off that one bad defeat in his last fight against McDonald, which obviously McDonald is a title contender and one of the best at 170. So you can't really, you know, knock him too much for that. But at the same time, I mean, we could be seeing a sign of potential decline. And against a hard hitter like Ellenberger, Saffiedine definitely has to be careful here. But what it comes down to more than anything else is, even though Ellenberger has a wrestling pedigree, he's got a ton of power on the feet as well. I think Saffiedine is the more conditioned. He's got more conditioning. He's the better conditioned fighter is what I'm trying to spit out here. So his cardio is going to be a little bit better. I think Saffiedine is the more versed striker. I mean, his leg kicks are brutal. I think he's the more technical striker as well. So on the feet, Saffiedine can win. And I don't think Ellenberger is going to be able to dominate this fight by getting takedowns and keeping him on his back. Because if the one thing that's improved along the way for Saffiedine, all with all the hard work he's put in, is his takedown defense. So it's not going to be an easy fight for Ellenberger to get this fight to the floor. And if he keeps on trying, he's actually going to wear himself out even more. So I have a little bit more faith in Saffiedine. I think he could win this fight on the cards, obviously, by outpointing Ellenberger. If not, maybe he catches Ellenberger along the way and knocks him out as well. I think the only way Ellenberger could realistically win this fight is by catching Saffiedine and knocking him out. So I don't think it's probably going to happen in this spot here. I think Saffiedine's going to get back on track, and hopefully he has enough left in the tank to make a run, because, man, the guy is a talented fighter, and I'd like to see him do some good things and possibly even get a potential title shot along the way. 170 is a great division right now. There's a lot of fights to be made, but Saffiedine being right back in the mix would be a good thing. So big fight for Ellenberger. If he is able to pull off this upset, I mean, he's going to definitely redeem himself and put himself in a better spot. But I think this fight is a little bit more geared towards Saffiedine, and I am going to go his way. I think he's the better fighter right now, and hopefully it shows.
For me, this fight is going to come down to how rusty Tarek Saffiedine is. He has not fought in 15 months. Jake Ellenberger fought this past summer. Did not go well for him against Stephen Thompson, but he does still possess some threats. I mean, Ellenberger definitely has power. He dropped Thompson actually early in that fight before getting dropped twice from those crazy kicks. And Ellenberger does still have that wrestling to fall back on. The problem is he has become a lot more conservative. He's become very unreliable. You really never know which Jake Ellenberger is going to show up. And his chin and just overall fighting aggression has just deteriorated so much. It's just very tough to rely on Jake Ellenberger at this point. I mean, he used to go out there with a ton of confidence and just smash people. I mean, if the Jake Ellenberger that beat Jake Shields was fighting this fight, I would pick him in a heartbeat against Saffiedine. But that Jake Ellenberger doesn't seem to exist anymore. So Tarek Saffiedine just seems like the safe bet. Saffiedine, even though he's coming off of a loss as well, I mean, he was a guy that's been in there with some real tough people, and he has come out pretty solid overall. He has nasty kicks, and he's just a very solid, accurate striker with pretty good overall defense. The best thing that Sabadine has going for him is he recently switched out to TriStar Gym. I think he's getting some great training. It was real intelligent of him to start working with the people that defeated him. And I think that he's going to go out there and just kind of put a clinic on Jake Ellenberger, because obviously TriStar is known for their jabs. I can really see that adding an extra notch to Sapadine's overall striking game. He has great striking fundamentals. He can finish his combinations with leg kicks. I think those are going to really take their toll on Ellenberger. And unless Ellenberger puts Sapadine out early, then I think that it's either going to be a decision or potentially a knockout victory for Sapadine. So, and I just don't know if that Jake Ellenberger exists anymore. So I'm going to side with Tarek Sapadine here. Now, kicking off the main card on Fox, we have Sage Northcutt in a lightweight battle, who is 7-0, taking on Brian Barberina, who is 10-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I up in Northcutt -265, the comeback for Barberina +185. And right now, looking over at the line, it has been bet up significantly. Northcutt is -410. The comeback on Barberina is +330. And that's actually with a little bit of a drop recently, some action coming back in on Barberina, but it's been pretty much all one way. For most people, they believe that Northcutt, the hype is real. I know that UFC's probably trying to match him with winnable opponents or winnable fights for him, and this could be another scenario where that's true. But for me, at this point of his career, Northcutt is a very athletic guy. He's a very talented fighter. There's no doubt about it. He's got some speed. He's got a little bit of power to go along with it. He's got some wrestling. He's got a good sub game. So he's got a little bit of everything. But the problem is he's still raw. He hasn't faced great competition thus far. And Barberina is one of those guys, man, he's going to be a tough out. I mean, Barberina has a lot of power. He trains at a good camp, even though he's taken this fight on short notice, just a couple weeks out, actually. Typically, his cardio is actually okay as well. He tends to kind of pick it up a little bit, and you don't really have to have too many cardio concerns for a guy like Barberina. So, in my opinion, this is going to be a very tough fight. That's why I opened a little bit more competitive. In my spot as a odds maker, I didn't think it was going to get bet up to close to 5-1 or 4-1 where it's sitting now. I thought we could see it kind of float up to maybe around 3.5-1 or something at the most. But I like the fact that people are betting Northcutt, because I think this is a scenario here where a lot of people can get burned. I mean, the guy, he's just not quite ready yet, I think, to face decent competition. Now, he is a favorite. He deserves to be a favorite in this spot as well. But I think he's going to be tested here with Barberina. Now, my problem with Barberina is a little bit defensively. I mean, again, I mentioned he trains at a good camp with the MMA lab. He's got a lot of power. He's a tough guy. He's hard to get out of there. But defensively on the feet, he does get tagged sometimes. And Northcutt has some speed. He's got that karate type of style, so he's got some unorthodox effective striking on the feet. He could and he will land on Barberina along the way. So Barberina's chin has to hold up. I think it will, though, because he's a pretty tough guy. And again, he's hard to get out of there. And then once Barberina gets in his range and his punching range and in the clinch work, everything, the dirty boxing range, I mean, Barberina can be very effective. He's a southpaw to go along with it. So that kind of gives Sage a little bit of a different look than he, you know, the typical fighter as well. So he's got that going for him. And just again, his toughness. And one bad part about Barberina I should mention as well, he can be taken down, and Northcutt's offensive wrestling is actually pretty explosive. So I wouldn't be surprised if Northcutt gets a takedown or two. But the thing here is Barberina is pretty tough to hold down and control. So I think what we will see is, unless Northcutt hops on something really quick, Barberina will probably end up back to his feet. And again, if he stays in close, I think he could be very effective and give Northcutt a lot of problems here. So, I mean, the writing's on the wall as far as why this fight was made, and even with the short notice and all that stuff. So I'm not ultra confident in either fighter here, to be honest with you. But I sure as heck wouldn't lay the juice on Northcutt. I think this is a dog or pass situation, and there could very well be some value on Barberina. As far as an official pick goes, though, with the short notice for Barberina coming in this fight, and then the UFC hype train on Northcutt, and I'm sure they expect him to win and they want him to win and all that stuff. I mean, as far as a pure pick goes, I kind of have to lean a little bit towards Northcutt at this point, but it's not a confident pick. No way. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Barberina pulls off this upset. If he can hang in there and his defense holds up a little bit, I think his cardio, even though it is short notice, is going to hold up enough that this is going to be the toughest fight of Northcutt's career, is what I'm thinking. So could be wrong here. I am going to pick officially Northcutt for now. We'll see at the weigh-ins. Maybe something could change my mind, but I am leaning his way slightly, not according to the odds. I mean, I think the odds are a little bit ridiculous here, and I think Barberina is going to put on a better show than the odds currently indicate.
Yeah, this is definitely a tough fight for Sage Northcutt, and he got tested in his last fight against Cody Pfister. He lost the first round, got taken down, and didn't really show many good ways of getting back to his feet or really any effort. So that's really not going to happen this time around, though. Brian Barberina is not a wrestler. He's a guy that likes to stand, get really deep inside the pocket, and then just start unloading with some short, dirty boxing. I mean, he has great Muay Thai. He has good elbows and knees up close. So that's really how Brian Barberina is going to get things going in this fight. But I think that's going to be difficult because Sage Northcutt is very dangerous from distance. He's way faster than Barberina. He is very accurate. He has high mobility, and I think that that is going to be tough for Barberina to try to get a beat on him a little bit. Now, Northcutt has been knocked out before. Granted, it was in his amateur career, but Barberina does possess power. Not really one-punch knockout power, but he can definitely accumulate some damage. So if Sage Northcutt gets a little too cute on the feet, Barberina could unload some combinations and hurt him and potentially follow up and put him away. Now, on the ground, Northcutt should have the advantage as well. Even though he got taken down and ground out a little bit in his last fight, he does still have a submission threat, and he also does have some excellent wrestling and transitions with his takedowns. So say the stand-up is not going well for Northcutt, I can see him just dropping, changing levels, and dumping Barberina on his head. And I'm not sure Barberina's going to have much of a way to get out of that situation. So Barberina is tough, though. I mean, his last fight against Chad Laprise, he held his own. It's just, you know, Laprise was just a little bit better. So I think that it's a similar situation here. Sage Northcutt is just going to be quicker, more explosive, way younger. Even though Barberina is not an old-timer by any stretch, I believe Barberina is 26 years old, but Sage is only 19. So I expect Sage to come in there and just try to live up to that hype a little bit, and he probably will. So I'm going to pick him, but you never know. So I would definitely be cautious with this one. Now, dropping down to the bantamweight division, we have Yuri Alcantara, who is 32-6 with one no contest, taking on Jimmy Rivera, who is 18-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Rivera -140 to come back on Alcantara even money at +100. Right now, looking over at the line, it's Rivera -170. Alcantara is +150. A little bit surprised. I thought, you know, if I open the line for Rivera being a slight favorite, it could possibly flip and Alcantara could get bet as a slight favorite as well. It's a pick 'em type of fight, but I lean a little bit more towards Rivera. And obviously most of the people and bettors out there, especially early on, do as well. I mean, Rivera, what can you say? The guy has definitely performed above and beyond expectations. I mean, his fight against Munoz in the last battle that he had for the UFC recently was awesome. It was outstanding. I mean, that performance he put on was great because Munoz is a legit fighter. I mean, there's no doubt about it. So that was a quality win, probably one of the best wins of his career at 135 for sure for Rivera. So Alcantara is going to be another challenge for him. I mean, Alcantara is a type of fighter. I think where the line is now, maybe people are starting to underestimate him a little bit, but Alcantara is very dangerous everywhere the fight takes place. I mean, he's got some decent wrestling in his own right. I think he's going to be a little bit longer in the spot. He's going to have a few inches of pure reach. And then on the feet, he does have power. He's got enough power to knock most people out. I mean, he can win with his kicking game. He can win with his hands. There's a lot of different ways Alcantara could actually finish you, even on the ground as well. So not an easy fight for Rivera at all, but I think along the way, Rivera does have some attributes that are going to win him the fight. I mean, he's got underrated wrestling. To be honest with you, I think he's going to be able to control that, especially if he can survive the early onslaught. Alcantara, one thing that he has as far as a flaw in his game is definitely his cardio. He tends to slow down outside of round one. He is a different fighter in round two and round three. That's why he has some close decisions. If it hits the scorecard, some questionable kind of decisions, and he hasn't looked the same. He's addressed that a little bit, and he's looking a little bit better. His cardio has been holding up, but still, I think Rivera is going to be able to push a higher pace in round two, round three. So if Alcantara can't get him out of there early on in the fight, I think Rivera does take over and he steals at least two out of the three rounds. He might even win all three because Rivera is that good. I mean, he can mix things up on the feet. He's got a little bit of power to go along with it. He's a very intelligent guy overall. I mean, So I think that his wrestling, his striking, he's going to be a little bit faster than Alcantara. Everything's going to come into play here, and he's going to win a very hard-fought battle over Alcantara. So I am leaning towards Rivera. As the line creeps up, though, I am starting to get a little bit worried. I mean, if everybody's on the same page thinking it's going to be a Rivera victory, maybe Alcantara shows up and surprises us all, and we're underestimating him a little bit. But really, when it comes down to it, I think Rivera at this point is the better fighter. He's a younger fighter, and I think he will be able to control more of this fight and the tempo of this fight, where Alcantara sometimes lacks a little bit. So I am picking Rivera to get the win, and I think he probably does.
Jimmy Rivera and Yuri Alcantara, it's actually a pretty even matchup. The big difference between these two, honestly, is the fact that Alcantara is 9 years older than him. Now, Alcantara has not looked old in a fight yet, although the one thing going against him is his conditioning. He does usually fade in fights, although his last fight against Leandro Issa, he did manage to come on strong late in the fight, as Issa was the one that gassed. So that was a bit of a reversal for him. But for the most part, Alcantara is a bit of a strong starter, and then he slows down. And Jimmy Rivera can definitely go hard all three rounds. He has a high pace. He's accurate. Rivera is an excellent overall striker with good power. You saw that in his last fight. He actually looked great against Pedro Munhoz. That was a war, one of the more entertaining fights of 2015. And Rivera stood in the pocket and traded and wasn't afraid to get hit, and that was a bit of an issue because he did get hurt in that fight. Now, if Alcantara connects with something heavy, then he could put Rivera out. Alcantara has a lot of power. I mean, you saw him hurt Uriah Faber when they fought, and Alcantara has knocked out guys like Ricardo Lamas at higher weight classes, so you definitely have to be concerned a little bit if you're Jimmy Rivera, especially early in this fight. And another thing to consider is, even though Rivera does have a pretty good wrestling background and a strong base, Alcantara can get takedowns. He does have a dangerous submission game, especially early. So what I see happening in this fight is maybe Alcantara gets off, goes aggressively at Rivera, and I expect Rivera to just be a little bit more technical. And as long as Rivera doesn't get reckless, then he should be able to either win a decision or maybe get a late stoppage, although no one's really been able to do that against Alcantara yet. So I expect Jimmy Rivera to just hold on a little bit, or weather that early storm, and walk away with a decision. So my pick is going to be Jimmy Rivera. Now moving all the way up to the heavyweight division, we have Josh Barnett, who is 34-7, taking on Ben Rothwell, who is 35-9. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I pin Barnett -185, the comeback on Rothwell +145. Another spot that the line's been out for quite a while. Right now, looking over at five times, it recently dropped even more. It's Barnett -130, the comeback on Rothwell +110. So more action coming in on Big Ben. You know what? The guy deserves it, man. I mean, he's actually looked pretty good as far as his recent fights. He's kind of talking the talk, but walking the walk along the way. He's performed really well in his last few fights. It's almost like something clicked with Big Ben. He's training better. His cardio is definitely better. He looks like just a re-energized, different fighter, mentally and physically. I know that his post-fight talk at times could be a little bit crazy, but at the same time, I mean, you got to love what you're getting out of Big Ben. And now Barnett, in my opinion, has always been one of the best heavyweights in the world. I mean, he's just got the total package. I mean, he's a very complete fighter. He can hurt you on the feet. Obviously, his submission catch wrestling is phenomenal on the ground as well. He's a great submission fighter, one of the best in the heavyweight division for sure. So there's a lot of great things to like about Barnett. And he's been performing relatively well overall. I mean, I think his worst setback was really those elbows that Travis Brown was able to land against the cage there on him. But that's one thing that does bother me. Even though Ben Rothwell was a different type of fighter in this spot, still, Barnett, he's 38 years old, and he's been in so many wars. He's fought some great competition throughout his career. I mean, you're talking about a former UFC champion way back when, and he's still relevant and kind of climbing up towards the rankings and in line for another title shot, especially if he gets his win over Rothwell here. So Barnett, not an easy out at all. He's a very talented fighter, and he's going to be game, and he's going to be prepared. And the thing about Barnett also is his fight IQ is tremendous. So he wants to win his fight. He's going to show up to do all that he can to win. But I think, I don't know, I just don't trust him as much. I know his last fight over Roy was impressive. Roy Nelson hits like a truck. He could put most heavyweights out. Burnett was able to survive it, and he looked okay throughout the five-round fight. But I think Ben Rothwell presents a little bit different, a different challenge for Burnett. I think even though it's only a three-round fight, I think he's not going to be able to kind of bully Nelson or bully Rothwell around as like he did a little bit against Nelson in that spot. I think Rothwell actually has a little bit of an underrated power game. I mean, he definitely has some devastating striking at times. He's a little bit slower, so I think that could be deceiving, but he ends up being fairly accurate, and he ends up landing very hard when he does. So to me, I think what happens in this fight, Barnett's going to have to look for some takedowns. I think Rothwell is going to be able to fend off the takedown attempts overall throughout the fight. And even if he gets put down, I think he's going to be able to kind of work his way back up. And if that's the case, I think Rothwell can actually outstrike Burnett. Even though Burnett's going to have a little bit more speed, I think Rothwell is going to have a little bit more power. And I trust Rothwell's chin, because if one thing he does have going for him in this spot is out of the two guys at this point in their careers, even though Rothwell is not a young buck, he's 34 years old as well, I think his chin is going to hold up a little bit better than Burnett. So along the way, I think it's very possible that Rothwell lands the harder shots. He lands a more effective strike. And I think he might even knock Burnett out, to be honest with you. So the confidence is there for Rothwell. I mean, he was in line. He wanted to take on, obviously, Stipe Miocic, which is getting a title shot here soon, or who knows what's going on with the heavyweight division and the title fight picture exactly at this moment. But there's a lot of good things going for Rothwell right now. I think the momentum's on his side. Even though Burnett kind of rebounded nicely with that win over Nelson, I still kind of give the edge to Rothwell in this fight. I know it's crazy, because if this was a couple years back, there's no way. I mean, I would be all over Burnett picking him, and I'm thinking that he's going to beat Rothwell. But from what I've seen in Rothwell lately, the hunger, the desire, and then him actually being able to win the fights the way he has in the cage, I mean, it's been pretty impressive. So I'm going to actually lean with Rothwell here as the underdog as well. I think that, again, he's going to probably be able to land the more significant strikes in this spot. And I just don't trust Barnett's chin right now. I mean, again, it might be a little bit unfair to say that, but from what I've seen, I think Rothwell can do a little bit more damage. I know he's a different type of striker, like I said, than Roy Nelson is. And I think that's just not going to be a good thing for Burnett. So a close competitive type of fight, but I actually lean a little bit more towards Rothwell to get the win here.
And I'm going to disagree. I think this fight's going to be competitive, but I think Josh Barnett is definitely the more well-rounded of the two. He is a passable striker. You saw that with his knockout win over Frank Mir, and he has an excellent ground game, which you've seen throughout his career. Now, in terms of what Ben Rothwell brings to the table, he's durable, and he has a lot of power. But other than that, he's not particularly quick. He's not particularly athletic. But Rothwell will be a little bit more physically bigger, because he's probably going to come in about 10, 15 pounds heavier than Barnett. But for the most part, these guys are about the same height, same reach, same everything. And it's just going to come down to skills. Now, Barnett does not have as good of a chin as Rothwell. So if Rothwell connects with something real solid, then Barnett could definitely go out. You did see that. He got hurt badly against Travis Brown because he was too over eager to get the fight to the floor and just ate a bunch of elbows along the fence. Now, I don't think Barnett needs to do that against Rothwell. What worked for him against Big Country was Barnett just kind of pushed a high pace and repeatedly backed Roy Nelson into the fence and then just started unloading with some great dirty boxing, big combinations. And that's something that he might be able to do against Rothwell as well. I see Barnett pushing this fight into the clinch, really turning it into a, you know, drag it out brawl type of fight. I think that's where he will thrive a little bit. He just has to be careful because, you know, one big shot from Rothwell could change it. But that was the case in his last fight too against Nelson, and he was able to avoid eating that huge shot. And I think that when he sees the punches coming, he's in a much better position to deflect them a little bit, maybe, you know, turn his head, maybe move with the punch a little bit. And with Rothwell, you're probably going to be seeing the punch coming for the most part, because Rothwell just is not very fast or quick or explosive. So I think Josh Barnett can get this fight to the floor if he really wants to. And I think he can get it to the clinch definitely. And I expect him to just push a little bit of a higher pace and not eat as many punches as Rothwell does. So I expect Barnett to possibly walk away with a decision here. So I'm going to side with Josh Barnett, the veteran. Just I think that extra well-roundedness of his game could be a big factor. Now moving on to the main event of the evening in the light heavyweight division, we have Anthony Johnson, who is 20-5, taking on Ryan Bader, who is 21-4. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Johnson, -350, the comeback on Bader, +250. Right now, it's Anthony Johnson, -310. The comeback on Ryan Bader is +255. So again, line margins kind of tighten up a little bit, and there is two-way action coming in on this fight as well. You're not going to typically see Bader as a huge underdog, especially the way he's been performing, I mean, recently. You got to give him a lot of respect, a lot of credit. I mean, the guy's a very solid fighter. The problem here is, man, he's fighting a buzzsaw in Anthony Johnson. I mean, realistically, if you look back at his fight against Cormier, I mean, he rebounded since that fight, but I'm pointing to that fight because he was winning that fight early on. He had Cormier in all sorts of trouble. I mean, that's just a credit to Cormier's chin. I don't know how he survived that punishment that he took from Anthony Johnson, but that's exactly what Bader's going to have to deal with here as well. I mean, Cormier is an outstanding wrestler. You know, he should be able to dictate the pace of the fight, get the takedowns, whatever you want to say in that spot. Bader's the same type of situation here for him. I mean, he's the wrestler. He has a little bit of power as well. He's going to look for some takedowns over Anthony Johnson, but it's not going to be easy for him to get it. And then on the feet, he's going to have to weather a heck of a storm early on. I mean, Anthony Johnson is so explosive. Even his wrestling is great. I mean, he's really been underrated in that aspect of the game for a long time. So it's not going to be easy for Bader to take the fight to the ground. And then on the feet, Anthony Johnson definitely has a significant advantage. I mean, Bader has some power, so Johnson can't take him lightly because Bader is one of those guys that has so much explosive power that he could put most out at light heavyweight for sure if he lands clean, no doubt about that. But Anthony Johnson is on another level with his knockout power and his striking ability. He mixes things up so well. So most of you guys know it is going to come down to, will Johnson win the fight early on, or as the fight goes, Bader's chances definitely improve. I mean, Bader's going to have a shot. If he's able to weather that early storm, round two, round three, however long the fight goes, I don't expect it to hit the scorecards. There's no doubt about that. I think it's going to end at some point inside the distance. But if so, you got to lead a little bit more towards Johnson. I think it's going to be very difficult for Bader to get those takedowns and control Johnson. And on the feet, you have to give the edge to Johnson. So if I could trust Bader's chin a little bit more, there would be some serious value, I think, on the underdog here. But it is what it is. I mean, you're going against a guy with a suspect chin facing a gentleman like Anthony Johnson that hits arguably the hardest in the whole division. You know, I mean, one of the hardest hitters in the entire sport. So that's not a good combination. So I got to lean. I mean, I'm going to keep it plain and simple, but I'm going to lean towards Anthony Johnson. He probably knocks out Ryan Bader. At the price, it's tough, though. I mean, how much confidence can you really have? Because it's one of those scenarios, if Bader can somehow survive it, he could probably win. I mean, it's the path to victory for me is basically laid out for him. If you can take Anthony Johnson's back, you're going to probably submit him. So Bader's going to look to do that at some point. I don't know. It's going to be difficult, though, for him. So I'm not that confident that he gets it done. But as far as the betting line goes, it could be a dog or pass situation. Still, though, I think Anthony Johnson probably knocks him out. So I'm going to lean Anthony Johnson to get the W here. And obviously, if he wins, it's going to be by knockout.
This fight's pretty straightforward. Anthony Johnson is going to try to knock Ryan Bader's head off for about 10 straight minutes. And if Ryan Bader can weather that storm, if he can hang on, then I think he could have a good chance of walking away with a decision victory, maybe even a late stoppage as Johnson starts to fade. The problem is, does Ryan Bader have the ability to survive and weather that storm? Anthony Johnson is extremely physical, very strong. He has a 4-inch reach advantage over Bader. They both have a lot of power, but Rumble's power is off the charts, while the chin strength is clearly in Johnson's favor. Ryan Bader has been hurt repeatedly on the feet. He's been knocked out multiple times in his career. And I expect that Anthony Johnson is going to catch him at some point. But for the most part, Ryan Bader is as good, if not probably the better wrestler of the two. So if he can somehow get this fight to the floor repeatedly, take away Anthony Johnson's weapons, then he could walk away with a win. But I just don't see it happening. Anthony Johnson is just so physical, and it really just takes one good punch from him. I mean, you saw what happened when Bader fought Glover Teixeira. I mean, he started so strong and actually had Glover hurt, and all it took was one big punch from Glover, and Bader just crashed to the canvas, and it was over. So really, I just don't see Ryan Bader avoiding and weathering that storm from Anthony Johnson. So I expect Anthony Johnson to step in there and probably get the first round KO. So my pick is going to be Anthony Johnson. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC on Fox 18. Now, part two of the Premium Oddscast featuring our premium bets will be out this Friday following the UFC on Fox 18 weigh-in. So stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker premium member. If you'd like to become a premium member, just go to MMAOddsbreaker.com and you can sign up in the top right corner of our homepage for either Nick's or Mike James's premium bets. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.